live. Okay, so it's October 14th, 2017. We're at North Key Street Congregation, and we're following the triennial parasha that we started, what was it, 2 years ago?
Exactly.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. And we are halfway, almost halfway through Leviticus. And let's open in a word of prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for your mercies, and thank you for being good. And even when times might seem hard or tough, we have hope in you. And we know that all things work to good, that trust you, that seek you, that follow you. And this is where we want our hearts to be this morning. Guide us in your word. In your name we pray. Amen. So let's start off by reading Leviticus 12. And it's only 8 verses.
For the parish, they have to ask Marvel's stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. Definitely. So, Gemma, would you like to read those 8 verses?
Then Adonai spoke to Moses, saying, speak to B'nai Israel, instructing, if a woman conceives and bears a male child, then she will be unclean for 7 days. As in the days of her Nida, she will be unclean. In the 8th day, the flesh of his foreskin is to be circumcised. She must wait during the blood of purification for 33 days. She's not to touch any holy thing, nor come into the sanctuary until the days of her purifying are complete. But if she bears a female child, then she'll be unclean for 2 weeks, as in her Nida, and she is to wait for the blood of purification for 66 days. When the days of her purification are completed for a son or a daughter, she is to bring to the Kohen, the priest, at the entrance of the tent of meeting, a year-old lamb for a burnt offering and a young pigeon or a turtle dove for a sin offering. He is to present it before Adonai and make atonement for her. Then she will be cleansed from the discharge of her blood. This is the Torah for her who gives birth, whether to a male or female child. If she cannot afford a lamb, then she's to bring 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons, one for a burnt offering and the other for a sin offering. Then the Kohen will make atonement for her and she will be clean.
Okay. Now, did anyone read these 2 sections, Leviticus 12 and Leviticus 13? So, Gemma, anyone else? So, what's the next part of Leviticus 13 about, those 17 verses?
Sabbath.
What?
Sabbath.
Sabbath, yeah. What King James called leprosy, but it's more like kind of like acne or some type of mold or something on your skin that doesn't look very good.
Eczema.
Yeah, I'm sure we could come up with a lot of names for it. So this morning, we could keep reading through all that, because time is short, and because what we just read in Leviticus 12 is what is the big connection to Isaiah, unless you know of other things in Isaiah that's connected to skin disease, let us know. I want to just stop here for today and just tell me what these 8 verses that we read in Leviticus 12 say. Just so it's all clear in our mind. So, a woman gives birth.
Childbirth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And?
When she gives birth to a male son.
Yeah.
She will be unclean for 7 days. But
okay.
But it's double that if she gives birth to a female.
Right. Okay. What do you do to the male child when he's born first?
Circumcise him on the 8th day.
Okay. Where does circumcision first appear in the Bible?
Isn't it with Moses and Moses' wife who gets mad because he's not circumcised?
It does appear there, but there's
Abraham.
Abraham, sir.
Where is that?
Genesis
21. If you want, let's just turn there just to refresh our memory. Tim, you want to read the first... few verses there.
Chapter 21?
Yeah.
And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And keep going.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
That's Genesis 1, Genesis 21.
Which one?
Jim, what were you
21, doing? 1 through 4.
So there's two little interesting things there in verse 4. It says he was circumcised when he was 8 days old, and he also verse 3 is the other interesting thing, and they called him his name. So his name and he's circumcised, it looks basically at the same time. As anybody knows, in Judaism today, you know, when you go to a brit for the circumcision, that's when the name becomes official.
And in many families, they really don't know the name until the brit.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the younger kids have argued about what it's going to be in those first 8 years.
So let's go back to Leviticus 12. So as it says there in verse 3, Leviticus 12, on the eighth day, you will cut off his foreskin. You will circumcise him. All right. And then, as Tim pointed out, there's a difference between having a male child and a female child, the time frame. And then, as far as the woman's blood being impure, this is kind of a complicated idea, and Nick, if you've got some background in this with Milgram and all of those things dealing with Tam'ah and Tawah, you know, pure and impure. But it seems that what happens is the first 7 days for a male child, the woman, whatever she touches, becomes contaminated. So it's also in other verses, and I think it's in Numbers and other places, where if she were to sit on a seat, it becomes contaminated. But then after those 7 days, then there's this period where she still has blood, but it's somehow a better level of purity.
I assume she's going to circumcise, her child is going to be circumcised on the eighth day.
Right.
So in a way, the 7 days are sort of in readiness for the circumcision, whereas the girl child...
There is no circumcision.
Has no need for a hafzakah or whatever.
Nick, you have any input on the difference between the 7 and the 14 days for male and female? Okay, so then come down to verse 6. Then at the end, so the way it seems it's put together here is, I'm going to focus on the male child here because that's pertinent to our text. There's the 7 days, and then there's the circumcision on the eighth day. And then 33 days after the 7 days, so it's on the 40th day, that what does the mother need to do?
Offerings, burnt offering and sin offerings.
That's right. So there's two offerings. The first one is what? Different sacrifices here?
A lamb.
Okay. One is a lamb, but what kind of offering is it?
Burnt.
Bola, right? Okay. And then there is the sin. And that is a pigeon or turtle dove or...
So the burnt offering is the lamb, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is this at 33 or 40 days?
This is on the 40th day. this the mother appears before the priest, says the Ohel Moed, tent of meeting. And as we know, later on, when there's the temple, it will be there in that area. So we're talking about Jerusalem here. And she will present these two offerings. And there's one caveat in verse 8. What is it?
If you can't afford a lamb, you can substitute two pigeons or doves.
Okay, so if you're, I guess, poor, I don't know, however you want to call it, what's politically correct to say, you can just double your pigeons. And so you just bring two pigeons to do both offerings.
Or triple doves.
Right, yeah. Look, birds.
Wait a minute, this is all on the mother. Oh, we're focused only on the male
yep.
child, right?
That's right, the mother with the male child.
But what is it? She's to wait in the blood of purification for 66 days.
That's for a female, if she has a baby, girl.
Okay, so this is all male. Okay.
Right, so here we go. So if there's a boy, it's 7 days, and then there's 33 days, which becomes a total of the 40th day. A girl, 14 days, 66 days, and that adds up to 80 days, the 80th day. All right, now let's get to the fun part, because we need context here to kind of build on this. There's one last thing that's missing in this passage about when a woman gives birth to a male child in the Bible. I mean, I'm probably missing a few things, but there's one big thing, and if you're Jewish, what else do we need to do for a firstborn male child?
Redemption of the firstborn.
Where do we first hear about this redemption of the firstborn? Exodus 13. If you want to turn there. Okay, and I'm going to just pick out the verses here. Exodus 13. Okay, verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses. He said, set apart to me every firstborn male, the first offspring of every womb among the Israelites, whether human or animal. It is mine. And so then he goes on to explain, why is this important? Anybody want to summarize it?
Remember this day on which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage.
What happened in Egypt?
They got whacked.
Who did?
The angel of death.
Who did?
Firstborn.
All the firstborns, right? Mm-hmm. Not just humans, right? Mm-hmm. Animals, too, were killed. Firstborn in Egypt. And so, it's the same thing in Israel. They're to remember that the firstborn of every animal, you know, goes through this whole thing here. You know, donkeys and cows and so on.
Jacob's sheep.
Yeah, you offer to the Lord, and it's a remembrance of basically Pesach. Okay, and then let's skip down to verse 12.
What's the expression in Hebrew for redemption of this one?
Piyut?
Pidyut.
Pidyon
Haben.
Pidyon
Haben.
Yeah, Pidyon Haben.
We had a great one on my men Pesach 10 years ago. It was amazing.
Okay. Verse 11. Exodus 13:11. When the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and your fathers and gives to you, then you must give over to the Lord the first offspring of every womb. Okay, that's like what we read in verse 2. Every firstling of a beast that you have, the males will be the Lord's. Every firstling of a donkey, you must redeem with the lamb. And redeem, right? Pidyon Haben, you're talking about there, the verb, you know, pada, to redeem. Pei dalet he. We're going to come back to that word in a little bit. Every firstborn of your sons, you must redeem. That's at the end of verse 13. And then it says, in the future, when your son asks you, what is this? You tell him, with a mighty hand, the Lord did this. And that's why I'm sacrificing to the Lord the first male offspring of every womb. But all my firstborn sons I redeem. Okay.
But in modern parlance, now for us, what does redeem mean? And what does sacrifice? You're not killing this firstborn.
Right.
You're offering it up to the Lord.
You're killing something in place of the firstborn. In place of your firstborn being killed as an offering, you're killing something else.
What's also happening in the Israelites?
So it's a crazy system, I mean, if you think about it, because your donkey is your firstborn. You say you kill a lamb or a whatever it is. I have problems with it, Daddy. That's all.
Well, it also adds to the.
I know, but
Gemma, it also adds to the Akedah, right? Abraham, go kill your firstborn son.
Right, that I got.
I mean, it's this kind of the same idea that this firstborn son is somehow special.
Right.
And obviously.
And in the ancient East, sometimes you would actually kill your firstborn son, like to, you know, there's a famine, you know, you want rain or whatever.
Right.
It's just like not like it was a foreign concept to
right.
To world cultures at that time.
Right.
Foreign to us, the notion is crazy to us, but
it's not crazy, but it's terribly easy for me to get it into my head and not to really understand it. But I can understand that the firstborn, you're offering it to God, you're remembering that the firstborn were killed when we were pulled out of Egypt, and you could also say that the firstborn son was killed when we came out of the slavery of sin. I mean, Yeshua was killed. But the redemption is Yeshua lives.
Yeah, I think we're working towards that.
Are
so
we?
Hold on to that.
Okay. Sorry, I'm struggling.
Yeah.
Buy back.
Yeah. Yep. So here's the question. Besides, you know, this whole barbaric idea that, you know, God wants blood, right? What else is happening in the Israelite society with the tribes and allotment and inheritance? There's a special tribe in the Israelites, isn't there?
The Levites.
The Levites. The Levites, what do?
They receive the offerings.
They receive these offerings.
And they have no land.
They have no inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
They have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they serve the Lord solely. And because of this, there's certain special, you know, perks, I guess you want to call it, that they receive.
Allotments.
And so there's also this idea that the firstborn, you know, if you don't kill them, they need to serve the Lord. It's kind of like you send one off, kind of like Samuel's mom did. Like, here's my firstborn son, I made a vow. Here, take him. He will serve you forever in Shiloh, in the tabernacle. So there's also that idea as well that, and you've had it throughout all cultures, right? There's a war, and your firstborn son has to go to war. But then a rich father says, no, I will pay a ton of money, and we'll send another person in place of him. You know, you hear this all the time in countries and histories of sons being bought not to go to war, and who knows what else involved. But and also in the Bible, what's the inheritance of the firstborn son?
Double.
It's double the portion of all the other sons. So, you know, as they say, to the whom comes great, what is it?
To whom is given much is expected.
Yeah, to whom is given a double portion, much is expected. You've got to do double the work, and, or have double the, you know, double the responsibility. So, anyway, that's another way to look at this idea of the firstborn son being redeemed, as well. Not just that there's got to be blood that's got to be spilled, but there's responsibility that is required of the firstborn son. Now, how is the firstborn son redeemed according to the Bible? Since you had one at your house, what did they whip out?
Well,
Well, what we did is we had a kiddush and we covered the kid with gold.
Okay, perfect.
Gold chain.
But it's not supposed to be gold, it's supposed to be silver.
Silver.
Okay, go to Numbers 18. Yeah, that's a modern...
flourish.
Yeah, that's right. It's better than silver, right?
I think we just took up whatever we were wearing.
Yeah. Numbers 18, you bought his life. Numbers 18, verse 15. The firstborn of every womb which they present to the Lord, whether human or animal, will be yours. Nevertheless, the firstborn sons, okay, so here we are again, you must redeem. And again, redeem here is padah. You've got to redeem these firstborn sons. And the firstborn males of unclean animals, you must redeem. Verse 16, and those that must be redeemed, you are to redeem when they are a month old, according to your estimation, for 5 shekels of silver, according to the sanctuary shekel, which is 20 gerahs. So 5 shekels of silver. Let's just use this as the idea. That's what you're redeeming with. And when is it supposed to happen, this redemption of the firstborn?
30 days.
30 days.
That's when we had ours.
Okay, so around in here is the, if you're looking at the boy, and he's a firstborn, redemption, 30 days, a month. Okay, because what I'm trying to build here is context for the Haftarah. So let's go there now. Let us go to Isaiah 9. And it's given as verse 5, and that is verse 5 of Hebrew, which in English is verse 6. So if you're looking at English, we start in verse 6. Hebrew, it's verse 5. And I just want to read those two verses, 6 and 7, in English. Go ahead, Gemma.
Verse 6 and 7?
Yep.
Or do you mean 5 and
6? Isaiah 6 and 7.
You don't want to start, for unto us a child is born.
Yes, that's it.
That's 5.
No, that's 6. In English,
yes.
Is 6, in Hebrew is 5.
Right, that's what we want. Go.
But unto us a child is born, a son will be given to us, and the government will be upon his shoulder. His name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, My Father of Eternity, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and shalom there will be no end, on the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and uphold it through justice and righteousness from now until forevermore. The zeal of Adonai Tzavaot will accomplish this.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Okay, let's talk about the son here. Okay, and everybody just lock Jesus out of your brain right now, okay? I'm not trying to say anything, but let's pretend this is Isaiah before Jesus was born, and let's talk about what Isaiah is writing about right then. And then, you know, prophecy plays out, and then you can start to interpret it later on as you see things happen. But what is the context of Isaiah here in chapter 9? Who is he serving under? Who are the kings of Jerusalem? Or who is the one king that he's talking to? The famous messianic Isaiah 7:14. The virgin shall conceive and bear a son. Who did Isaiah tell this to? Which king? Ahaz.
Ahaz.
So, I know he's not like the most famous king out there, but his son would be. Who was his son? Come on. Hezekiah. Hezekiah. And, well, you know all these things about Hezekiah from the Bible, right? And who are Ahaz and Hezekiah? They are sons of... Who's their most important ancestor?
David.
They're sons of David. And where do they rule from?
Jerusalem.
What do they sit on?
The
throne of David. Who set the throne in Jerusalem? David.
David.
I mean, Saul didn't, right? Where did Saul rule from? He's the first king of Israel. He rules in Benjamin. I mean, that's his home area. That's where he rules from in a sort of way. But David is the one who makes Jerusalem central to the Israelite kingdom. And, I mean, this is why we know about it today. This is why it's talked about today. This is why Jerusalem is such a hotbed of, you know, political
turmoil.
Because it's all about Jerusalem. It's the city of David. It's the throne of David. And so who is Isaiah talking about here? A 9? On one hand, we can say it's someone way off in the future. It's some utopia, some person that, you know, as for Christians, we understand it to be Jesus, you know, the Prince of Peace, Handel's Messiah. We sing it at Christmas all the time. And where is this? It doesn't say Messiah here, but this son of David, where is it? Where is he going to rule from? What does it say here?
The throne of David.
The throne of David.
Right.
Right?
But what is weird, and it ties up, I think, with the famous a virgin shall have a child, or however you want to call it. It's a ludicrous statement.
Yes.
Because, in fact, in Hebrew, that's what the good Jews argue about, is that it's not virgin at all, it's just a young woman. But if it is a young woman, it's absolutely ridiculous to say a young woman will have a child, because, of course, most young women have children. And here it's equally daft to say that a son will be given to us. I mean, that's equally daft. You know, most women, most girls end up having a child or having a son or whatever. It's a sort of norm. And yet somehow it's got this extraordinary prophetic implication.
Well, what's wrong with the word given?
No, she's saying there's nothing special about it. There's nothing special about just a son being given to us unless it's... He's been given to us in a special way. That's what you're saying.
Well, that's what I think he's saying now. But it starts off with a child is born.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's a common thing of life.
It's pretty common.
Yeah.
It's pretty common.
It isn't special unless you're saying that something special is happening here. Something extraordinary.
Something extraordinary. And equally extraordinary when you say a young woman will have a son. Mm-hmm. I mean, the good Christians argue, well,
so a son is born. Okay, we were reading the Haftarah, we're reading the Parashah. What should we be thinking about? A son is born. We should be thinking about all of this. This is what I'm trying to say this morning. Okay, son is born. So there's this whole process. Son is born. This is what happens. I'm just trying to give a context here for you to be thinking. A son is born.
A child is born. I have. What's
it's been.
It's yet in 11.
Right. But
born to us.
It says Ben.
It starts
and
off.
Then it says a son will be given.
That's right. It starts off Yeled, and then it's Ben.
Oh, it's Yeled and then Ben.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So keep all this in mind. What we've just gone over here. This is what I want to say. Let's now go. And one last thing. He has all these cool names that we all know. But there's one part that always kind of gets skipped over, and that's at the very end of verse 7. After the David's throne business. What's it say that he will do?
Establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness.
Okay. In Hebrew, what is that? Justice and righteousness.
Yeah, the Mishpat.
Mishpat the Tzedek.
Mishpat?
Utsdaka.
Okay.
Mishpat. Utsdaka. This is a justice... and righteousness. Here's something that a lot of people don't know. Moshe Beinfeld, he was an Israeli scholar at the Hebrew University many years ago. He wrote a book on this idea, justice and righteousness. And this phrase, if you go through the Bible, and you also go through the ancient Near East, and you look at other literature out there, this phrase basically summarizes a ruler who focuses on the poor and the needy. It's a technical term.
It's a technical term. And often it gets buried in our Christian interpretation just because. I don't know the whole history there. But I just want to point that out. That
and what's the Hebrew word?
Mishpat tzedakah is the righteousness. And sometimes it's mishpat and tzedek. And if you go through and you read Psalm, I think it's Psalm 72 and other passages in the Bible, and they talk about kings, good kings. It's in First and Second Kings, talking about Jeremiah, all the prophets. A good king does this. He takes care of his people. He's not focused on power and himself, but he's focused on his people that are suffering.
He restores the way legal process is applied for poor people.
He makes sure that there's not bribes.
Yeah.
That there's not, like, justice is being bent.
It's not being inverted.
Yeah, inverted. Okay, keep that in mind. Now go to Isaiah 66.
Well, we go there. Can I just ask a quick question?
Yeah, sorry.
Does it have to be in that order, Mishpat Tzedakah, or?
Not, you're talking about on Weinfeld's thing?
No, I'm looking back to, I mean, Abraham is described as righteousness and justice.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, but those two things, the combination.
Yeah.
It usually shows up like that, like 90% of the time.
But yeah, you're right, it can be flipped.
It's not linked to Melchizedek, is it? Because Melchizedek is king of righteousness, but maybe they just pick it up.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's tzedek and tzedakah all over the place, meaning righteousness.
Right.
When you have mishpat tzedakah, That's a term.
I mean, you come to the day with the poor in Judaism and in Israel, and they have a little, tzedakah box at Mikolas or wherever. You know, you drop your little change in there, and it goes to the poor. Where do we see this in Jesus? Jesus talks about, you know, people who do their righteousness, their tzedakah. Yeah, it's in Matthew 6.
When it's used like that, that's a technical term for charity.
Right.
When you say it like that, you mean charity. You don't
But my point is that is descended from this first temple period where it meant kind of a broader thing, and then it starts to be giving, just you're giving alms to the poor. But it's descended. It follows that line. Okay, so Isaiah 66, verse 7. This is our second part of the Haftarah. Here we go. Before she goes into labor, she gives birth.
That's weird.
Before her contractions begin, she delivers a boy. Who has ever heard of such a thing? Who has ever seen this? Can a country be brought forth in one day? Can a nation be born in a single moment? Yet as soon as Zion goes into labor, she gives birth to sons. Okay, what's the connection here? What are some parallels we have?
We've got the male child.
Got it, we have a male child. And who is the mother?
Jerusalem.
Jerusalem.
Called here, what's another name for Jerusalem?
Sion.
In Lamentations, she's called Bat Sion. Jerusalem's got all kinds of names. Ariel, and Sion is probably Jerusalem's second most famous name.
What's the conflict between before she was in labor, she gave birth, verse 7, and then it says, as soon as she was in labor, she gave birth.
The conflict?
It's on the one hand, who's ever heard of anybody giving birth before they were in labor?
Right. This is not natural. Right?
No, like
in Isaiah 9, you were saying a child is born, and like that's kind of natural.
That's supernatural. Now we've got the opposite.
Yeah, right.
That's good. I've not seen that before. That's good.
Okay, and so I'll go to verse 9. Do I bring a baby to the birth opening and then not deliver it? So who's the, I want to use the term doctor here, but what do you call it?
Midwife.
Who's the midwife here?
Me.
God is the midwife. God's the midwife. Who's the mother? Jerusalem. Who's the baby? Or is it babies? Right? Verse 8 says,
children.
She gives birth to banim. So technically, you could say it's sons. I guess it could also be a generic term for children, but let's just focus on the idea of sons here. Be happy for Jerusalem. Rejoice with her, all you who love her. Share in her great joy, all you who have mourned over her. For you will nurse from her satisfying breast and be nourished. You will feed with joy from her breast. This is what the Lord says. Look, I am ready to extend to her prosperity that will flow like a river. The riches of nations will flow into her like a stream that floods its banks. And the term here everybody knows for nations is goyim, right? Gentiles. And verse 13, as a mother consoles her child, so I will console you, and you will be consoled over Jerusalem. When you see this, you will be happy, and you will be revived. The Lord will reveal his power to his servants and his anger to his enemies. The translation there is, it says, when you see this, you will be happy, your hearts will be happy, and your bones will be like grass that will flourish or spring forth. Does anybody know where that's carved here in Jerusalem on a very famous wall? The wall? The Western Wall? Yeah, it's as carved from about the 4th century. If you go to the southern steps, Shaul Sapir showed it to us, back in the day. What happened was, there was a Roman emperor who, they called him a pagan. It was right after Constantine had made the Roman Empire Christian. And just a few years after that, another Roman emperor came along, forget his name, but he decided that he was going to go back to the old ways of the Roman Empire. And for Julian, there you go. They call him Julian the Apostate in church tradition. And he didn't rule for very long, but one of the things that was happening is the Jews that were living here got excited because they thought they were going to get maybe to rebuild the temple and establish some type of, in Julian's idea of pluralism of, not saying this is the only way we're going to worship. So anyways, that's carved there. It's hard to see it. It's, it's faded over 1600 years, but if you know where to look, it's up there. The verse 14, those first six words. And when you see this, you will be happy, your hearts will be happy, and your bones will be like grass that flowers. Those words.
It's interesting because bones, grass, withers.
Okay, sorry. So, but yeah, but yeah. Thanks. Did you just you knew that or?
Yeah.
All right. Good. So it's missing the last word about.
There was no tiflach in the end. There was no flourishing. The stone is flipped upside down. It's repurposed, I think. And
yeah.
So you have to read like that. You have to read.
Yeah. So.
Grass perishes. I'm not sure that I want my bones to be like grass.
Yeah.
They're already close to it.
In the Davidson Center. So not the...
If you're looking at the wall where you're praying, it's to the right of that. It's not in the area where you pray. It's down.
In the
archaeological. In the archaeological.
You want to take my car. All right, so let's bring this all together here. Leviticus 12, the idea of this boy being born, and we just read in Isaiah 9, we read in Isaiah 66. What ties these passages together? What are the big themes?
The birth of a male child.
Birth of a male child. And when we say a birth of a male child, I want us to have in the back of our mind what's happening here. Okay, so let's review. What's happening when a male child is born? First thing, he is
circumcised.
Eighth day. And the mother has her impurity. Then, let's say it's a firstborn male child. On the 30th day, he's going to be redeemed with 5 shekels of silver. And this idea goes back to Pesach, that the firstborn males are the Lord's. And then, finally, on the 40th day, what happens? The mother is appearing before the Lord. Let's just call it the temple. And she is going to present what?
Burnt offering and sin offering.
Burnt offering and sin offering for her, her situation with the blood. And, okay, so this is in the background here. So we come to Isaiah 9, we have a son is born, and it's, what specific son is it?
Hezekiah.
Okay, we could say Hezekiah, but let's just say a son of David, right? It's someone who's descended from David, sits on David's throne. We come to Isaiah 66, who do we have here? We have a son born, right? And but it seems like the focus is more on the mother here, right? And the mother is Jerusalem, and she's giving birth to a son, and sons, you can say.
To a nation.
To a nation. So all of that is connected.
You get the feeling that, that God is saying the whole thing is miraculous. Like the whole thing. All of it, all the whole, the birth, the fact that God is giving life, it's not just something that just happens. And you owe God for all of this, and you can't really pay Him back. So you do need to do this symbolic thing.
Right, because 5 shekels is nothing.
Yeah,
it's
5 shekels is nothing. A pigeon is nothing. A lamb is nothing.
Not for a life.
You can't spill enough blood for all of it, for any of it.
Right.
But to internalize your realization how miraculous this is, how much you owe God for all of this, you're gonna do something to sanctify this, to consecrate it, to memorialize it, at 7 days, at 33 days, at 40, whatever, just to emphasize how much we're indebted to God, how much we.
It is also the extraordinary mixture between what you would call the natural. A child is born, a son is given. We haven't talked about that, but this child is born, a woman is having a child. That's all pretty natural. And you then go through the process of offering it to the Lord and doing all the things you have to do. And now you have something completely different. You have this mother not giving birth to a son, you're giving birth to a land and a whole. And it even starts to be born before it's ready for delivery. I mean.
So this is my punchline this morning. There is one passage that combines all of these verses here. What is it in the New Testament? Okay, let's go to Luke 2. This is where we're going to end this morning. And I found it very fascinating. Let's go to verse 21. Tim, you want to read those first 4 verses?
Sure. And when 8 days were completed for the circumcision of the child, his name was called Jesus, the name given by the angel before he was conceived in the womb. Now when the days of purification according to the law of Moses were completed, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that opens the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. And to offer a sacrifice according to what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or 2 young pigeons.
So, what do we find here in these first 4 verses? Jesus is born and
he gets his name before he was conceived, so that's before his birth.
Yeah, but he's not named until the 8th day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They do all this for him.
Yeah,
he's
circumcised on the 8th day.
Okay, right.
He gets his name, and
the days of purification are fulfilled.
Yep, and so we're talking about Leviticus 12 here. this is purification for his mom, Mary,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Taken to the temple. And what does she, what is her offering?
You know, just as an aside, by the way, you very often read in the newspaper,
pigeon.
The Israeli
yeah.
newspapers, that January 1st is when Christians, in Israeli newspapers only, is when Christians celebrate Jesus' circumcision.
Yes.
Right.
They're convinced, Israelis are convinced that's what it's for, and that's what we're doing. Like,
but
and Christians have no clue that
well,
Jesus was circumcised
well,
or that he did any of this.
Well, evangelical Christians, like old church Christians do.
Yeah,
I mean, Orthodox. I mean,
there is a festival of circumcision, but of course it's linked to Christmas Day, which is...
And that's a whole other thing. But there's two verses that are mentioned here that Tim just read. One was Leviticus 12, about the two pigeons,
mm-hmm.
right? So Mary obviously wasn't rich. She offers
mm-hmm.
two pigeons. We talked about that. What's the other verse that's mentioned here?
Every firstborn male, which is from the Exodus,
will be set apart to the Lord, which is from Exodus 13, which is, we're talking about what?
30th day. We're talking about the redemption of the firstborn.
Yeah.
They were conflated.
But it's being conflated,
yeah.
But we know the context here. Right? We know the context. Of course that's going to be a part of it. Mary's never, she's a virgin. She's never had a child before. So he is the firstborn male of her. So he's there's a redemption of him. And Mary's going through a purifying exercise. So let's continue. Okay, go ahead, Tim.
All right, verse 25?
Yep.
And behold, there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. And this man was just and devout, waiting for the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was upon him. And it had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not see death before he had seen the Lord's Christ. So he came by the Spirit into the temple. And when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him according to the custom of the law, he took up in his arms and blessed God, took him up in his arms and blessed God and said, Lord, now you are letting your servant depart in peace, according to your word, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared before the face of all peoples, a light to bring revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel.
Yeah, he just.
And Joseph and his mother marveled at those things which were spoken of him. Then Simeon blessed them and said to Mary his mother, Behold, this child is destined for the fall and rising of many in Israel, and for a sign which will be spoken against. Yes, a sword will pierce through your own soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Now there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was of a great age and had lived with her husband 7 years from her virginity. And this woman was a widow of about 84 years, which did not depart from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day. And coming in that instant, she gave thanks to the Lord and spoke of him to all those who looked for redemption in Jerusalem.
Okay. Beautiful. So
there's two people waiting in the temple when Jesus is brought to do his business. Those people are
Simeon
and
Anna.
Okay.
What is Simeon's word of prophecy that he speaks here? What are some things that pop out? Why is he in the temple?
He's waiting.
He's waiting.
He's waiting
for the consolation of Israel. Okay. Do you remember in Isaiah 66, they said, you know, be happy for her. She was, you know, you were sad or she was mourning. What was Isaiah talking about with Jerusalem, the city? She had been destroyed. And now she is being brought back to life again. What is Simeon, what is this consolation of Israel? What's the situation then? Who's basically running the country?
Roman occupation.
Roman occupation. Herod, he's a pretty bad guy. His sons, similar idea. Even though Jerusalem is not destroyed during that time, it's still considered not really right. And so he's waiting for this consolation. So what's his prophecy here? For my eyes have seen your salvation that you have prepared in the presence of all peoples. Who are peoples here in the Greek?
Israel.
Goyim.
Well, the Goyim. Yeah, well, that's right. That it's ethne, and that Goyim is the Hebrew. So if you were to look back at Isaiah 66, verse 18, which we didn't actually read, but it's in there in the following verses. And when God's talking about how he's going to make Jerusalem awesome again, he says, he talks about the nations. I hate their deeds and thoughts, so I am coming to gather all the nations, the Goyim, and the ethnic groups. They will come, or tongues, they will come and they will see my splendor. So back in Luke 2, he says, you know, my eyes have seen your salvation, and it's in the presence of all the nations as well, or they're going to see it. Well, actually, it doesn't say see it, but it's in there, it's before them, they're in their presence. And then he uses this very important phrase.
Wait, so Jesus is the splendor?
Looks like it here.
Well, it's my glory. I mean, the glory of the Lord is, you know, whether you think about his presence or the transfiguration or whatever it is.
But before we go into this interpretation here, I just want to hit that one verse, though. This is a light for revelation to the Gentiles. A light to the Gentiles. Where do we find that?
The people that have walked in darkness have seen a great light.
Yeah, where is that?
That's Isaiah.
Right, Isaiah 60. Yes. And this phrase is only, it only appears in Isaiah. A light to the Gentiles. Isaiah 42, verse 6. Isaiah 49, verse 6. Isaiah 51, 4 to 5. And Isaiah 60, verse 3. This is a phrase that is very Isaiah, and so that's also important, I think, to point out. And finally, as we come to the conclusion here this morning, we come to Anna. And how does Anna's prophecy, okay, she says, you know, there's going to be a sword that's going to pierce your heart, talking to Mary. No, sorry, that was Simeon. Anna says that she gave thanks to God when she saw Jesus and all who were waiting for the redemption of Jerusalem. And this is where I want to end this morning with this connection. That word, lutrosin, in the Greek, is translated often in the Hebrew as pada, like that, where we get the redeeming of the firstborn son. And so like if you go to Exodus 13:13, it talks about redeeming the firstborn son. This word is related to the redemption of Jerusalem. So you got to kind of go with me here. Instead of redeeming the firstborn son here, it's actually the mother that's being redeemed. It's Jerusalem. If you follow Isaiah 66, that Jerusalem is this mother, and she's being redeemed. And kind of like Anna in Luke 2 is fulfilling Isaiah 66 with this idea of redemption. Redemption, as you know, because this is what you brought up before, like what is redemption? It means it's a broad expanse of meaning. And it has this idea also of salvation, being freed, liberated. And again, if Jerusalem is under Roman occupation, then you have this idea of, that's why a lot of people have often talked about, you know, was Jesus some political rebel? You know, he's trying to throw off Roman occupation. That's one interpretation some people will come up with, you know, or is it more of a, you know, spiritual freedom? But I want to end with this one thing that I found again with Isaiah. Is there's one time where it says Jerusalem will be redeemed, pada, in the Hebrew, and it's in Isaiah verse chapter 1, and it says how it will be redeemed, Isaiah 1:27, and we'll end with that, Isaiah chapter 1. What does he say here?
He says, Sion will be redeemed by justice, and those in her who repent by righteousness. That phrase again.
Yeah. And so it's curious, and if you read all of chapter 1 of Isaiah, it's basically a sermon against the evils of what's happening in Jerusalem and the lack of leadership during, I think it's Ahaz's time. And Isaiah has this vision.
Ahaz,
yeah. Yeah, he starts with Uzziah and he goes
right.
All the way to Hezekiah.
Right.
But Sion b'mishpat tipade v'shaveha b'tzedaka. So it's just interesting to think that, you know, everybody's always kind of looking for their, and Randy's done a Bible study on this verse actually, where he says in the Hebrew the word order is focusing on the mishpat. It puts that first. It puts the justice, then the verb next, and that is a fronting technique to say this is very important. Because normally in Hebrew, your verb will come first and then the noun. But that the focus is on this justice, that you got to practice. If you want God to step in, you also have to show that, you know, you're a follower of him. You got to do what God tells us to do.
A bit like Danny said, it's like you've got to reestablish the, what did he call it, the technical process of justice and righteousness.
Yeah,
it's
a good king does this.
A good king does this, and you've got to be part of it, and you've got to have no part of
wickedness, evil,
or whatever it is.
Yeah, perversion of justice.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not like God is some deus ex machina, some sort of God out there. You have to be part of that process. You have to be equally committed to justice and righteousness.
Yeah.
And working that out in daily life, whether it's in your dealings and whatever. That's pretty powerful stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, is it Paul? He says, work out your faith
with
fear and trembling.
Fear and trembling.
Fear and trembling.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
So how long are you a grass widow for?